Well, Nate, we're back for another episode of Seven Figure Music School.
What an episode. Look where we are.
I know. And we're joined here with David, and we're excited to do a 5 for 5 episode. David, thanks for inviting us to your home. We're up here on the 51st floor in downtown Brooklyn. And David, you've really got a unique studio. It's one of the reasons why I want to do this 5 for 5. And for those who listen and watch the podcast, you know, we like to bring on folks from time to time who have built what I think is a unique studio. And so I don't think there's a better candidate in my mind. And for a year, I've really wanted to do a 5 for 5 with you, David. So thanks for inviting us up. And I'm looking forward to kind of putting you under the microscope.
And what's, David, one thing that's just awesome is that the last time we were hanging out, I think was December, yeah?
Yep.
And you came over, we did a really fun episode together.
Couple.
Yeah. Right? At BMF. And what's awesome is that we're in your home. Well, I mean, we're not in your home, but we're
in your building.
In your building.
Yeah.
And I can literally see my home from here. And it's
you can see almost everything.
You can see almost everything. So
I didn't even know you were so close at the time. So
right. I know, totally. And here we are. So now we're hanging again. So we're looking forward to it.
Thanks so much for having me. I mean, I'm honored that both of you are here. So
cool.
Thanks.
So as we usually do in the 5 for 5 episodes, we jump right into the questions. We have 5 questions, 5 minutes each.
I'll be the timekeeper.
Sounds good. Since we're not in computers, since we're all live, I don't have my stopwatch running. So David, what I think would be really helpful in starting out here is for you to give like the 90-second, 2-minute overview of what your studio is, who you serve, what makes it unique, and anything else you think would be helpful to give context to people who are listening? Because your studio truly, in terms of its programming, in terms of the clientele you serve, it's very unlike any studio I've ever seen.
Sure. So we're serving the serious adult, and it's mostly amateurs. It could be piano teachers as well. And these are basically, you know, weekly, long-term students with excellent attendance that are ready to get started right away, that are seriously invested in their own progress. And we have 3 main types of programs. So we have virtual private lessons, and these are kind of more like your traditional lessons. All of them are using my unique learning methodologies for advancing extremely quickly, though, that are deeply set in strategy and mindset. Then we also have what I call our strategic teams, which is essentially a very high-level group program. And if somebody, for instance, is playing, let's say, Chopin's Revolutionary Etude or a full Beethoven sonata, they can still be within this program. So like we don't have to move them to one-on-one once they get to a certain level. And this is a 90-minute class that meets weekly. But it still is similar to private lessons in that there is a set weekly time. And then our final program is Pianist Collective, which is this online mastermind that I've started. And it is the most non-traditional because it's not private lessons. It's not group lessons. It's not an online course with a community added on. The focus in the mastermind is on the quality of members and the community and the instruction. And the course technically doesn't need to exist at all. It's sort of like a bonus on the side. And most of the course, so to speak, is public on YouTube anyway. And there's twice weekly 2-hour calls that members can attend as much or as little as they like. There's a 24/7 community. There's a direct line of communication with me and my staff. And there are numerous performance opportunities, recitals, in-person meetups, and other events, and other chances for accountability as well, too. So that's the high-level view of our programs.
Yeah. When you think of your studio, what are you most proud of? Something you feel that you do really well in your studio?
I would say, honestly, it's just the time and care I put into knowing the people that we're helping. And in this case, it's like the serious adult student. And the better that I know them, really, the better I can genuinely solve their problem. I don't think that it's something that's exclusive to adult students. But for instance, on the surface level, it might be technique or theory or something, when I think the deeper issue a lot of the time is that adults think that they don't have enough time or they're blindsided by busy things that happen. So often I'll say things like, you know, everybody has family things, personal things, work things, like the holidays come around every year and surprise, there's travel again.
Right.
And, you know, we understand how to help with that. If we can overcome those obstacles, you can stick around long enough to receive the results that you're looking for.
Can you define for us serious adults? I love the language you use.
Sure. Yeah, I think that there's this misconception sometimes that we're working only with advanced students or people that have played for a long time, but there's no auditions, there's no stringent requirements or anything. It's really just somebody that's seriously invested in themselves to get the best results possible. And that means, I mean, we say like weekly, long-term students with excellent attendance, as opposed to somebody who maybe just wants a lesson once in a while, every other week, once a month. And there's nothing wrong with this, but it's, in my experience, much more difficult to get the best result possible if you're not as consistent. So, yeah.
How do you, one other just follow up on this, because I love this. It seems like you have criteria actually to qualify, you know, a potential customer, right?
Sure.
Do you, tell me how that enrollment process exists for you to ensure that you're built, because I think one of the things that's inspiring about what you've built, David, is that it's like, it's very communal, like you have a community of these serious adults and you're trying to get them to connect with one another. You're connecting with them. You're getting to know them better.
Sure.
How do you actually enroll with intention to ensure that you're the right people in your community?
Yeah, I would say that I could probably go on too long about this.
Yeah, that'd be cool message.
We do have a lot of asks up front. And so before even we have the opening call with them, I send a long text that's already a much shorter version of a way longer text that I ask, are you, you know, looking for weekly long-term lessons with excellent attendance? Are you ready to get started right away? I even ask them if they're comfortable purchasing the first lesson package on call. And I say all the pricing and everything. And that's, it's kind of like the opposite sometimes of a traditional sales process, because I also tell them, well, adults will also tend to endlessly put things off and procrastinate. And I'm not here to force anybody into anything. We're just completely transparent up front, because, you know, if you're the sort of person that's going to start going to the gym like today or tomorrow, and in this case, a music school, then you're much more likely that you're going to succeed. Or it might be that you're suited for a more casual program almost anywhere else, and there's nothing wrong with that either. So that's what I say when I send these long texts. And if they respond, I then ask them qualifying questions that, it sounds funny, but basically I just ask them questions to make sure that they read that whole test. And if they set up the interview time, if they can pass those questions, then I send them just a ton of resources. I basically try to bombard them with value, like here's a two-hour video I made, here's essentially like a free course that I made already online. There's no opt-in or anything. I don't ask for their emails. Maybe they've already filled out the form, and then they'll get on a long interview with me. So it could be 90 minutes to 2 hours long where I get to genuinely know the person. So, because I'm all about building a real relationship with the person. And since I can't afford to spend 90 minutes, 2 hours with every single person, that's kind of done on the front end. And then we decide which program they go into from there.
David, that's 5 minutes. Alarm just went off. Means I'm going on to question number two. What is one challenge that you're facing right now in your program that you're trying to, you know, a resistance point, something where you're trying to overcome it? You don't necessarily need to have a solution yet. Really curious to know what your challenge is.
Sure. I would say that one of our biggest challenges is still student retention. And much like other adult programs out there, even though I think that we've made some really good progress towards solving this, I mentioned that we understand the adult student much better. We understand their busy lives. It's really not even adults. It's kind of niched down further to essentially busy, successful adults
Right.
that are seriously invested in themselves. And yet, even though I feel I've connected with them on a much deeper level, I can't say that I've definitively solved it. I think I've saved a lot more people in the middle, because I basically say, this will happen to you. You will inevitably become busy. Like, everybody's lives goes like this. During
Right.
these busy times, that's when you need the most support. You're going to be practicing, you know, half an hour a day or 20 minutes a day or 40 minutes a day. And then when you're busy, you'll practice like 10 minutes twice a week. That is normal. You don't need to feel bad about it. We're here to support you. And then if you can continue through those tricky times, then you'll receive the results that you're looking for. And I tell the stories of like, don't let this happen to you. Try not to be that guy or that gal. And I would say that it's saved a lot of people, but you will still have people that still do the exact thing that
you tell them not to do.
Yeah. See, it's still a work. I'm just going to keep iterating, and I think I'm going to come up with even more stories to tell, and I'll just keep chipping away. But I don't know if it's a completely solvable problem. Like, you know, no adult students will leave just because I've exhausted the number of possible stories.
Sure. Yeah. And have you seen an improvement in the amount of time that someone stays in the program?
Yeah, I would say that there's been an improvement overall, but there's still some ways to go, I would say. Because there have been times when, in a good way, people say that they have felt even called out. Like, they've even reached out because I made a video called Insanely Busy, Perfect Time for Piano Lessons.
Yeah.
I had somebody reach out who said that he realized that he would die before he played the piano if he didn't reach out. Because he's just going to, that's just a part of his life. Like, he's just that busy a lot of the time. So logically, it's like, if you're not planning on being less busy next year, then of course,
right,
just like you wouldn't, I always use the gym analogy because it's so easy for people to understand. If you, like, I'm going to take off from the gym for maybe about 4 or 5 months, just pause for a while, and then even if it does work, you just won't consistently be out. Yeah. And won't consistently play the PA either.
Right. Yeah. I was visiting another school in New Jersey a couple days ago. What was interesting is the person who was visiting, the owner of the school, shared their specific number of months that the length of time that a student stayed. And it was fascinating to me because I thought, okay, do I actually know down to the month the average length of stay of a student at Brooklyn Music Factory? And I'm researching it right now and trying to figure out what the criteria around who stays the longest, but what is the actual average? Do you have an average right now in terms of your retention?
Sure. I would say it's hard for us to say accurately because, as both of you know, I've essentially made very aggressive changes in the business since the beginning.
There
were big rate increases. Like, I started the strategic teams in the beginning of 2022, and then 6 months later, I had the vision for the collective, and then that started last year. And so I think it's hard to estimate exactly. Right now, I'm estimating 6 months, like, conservatively. Mm-hmm. And there are people that have been, but the people that have been with me for years, they have lasted through several very different realities.
Right.
So that doesn't mean that the current, I would like to think that now it seems much more likely that people may stay much further beyond that.
Mm.
I just can't say for sure because it hasn't existed for very long, some of my newest programs.
All the more reason to have you back on a future app where we can follow up on these 100%. That's 5 minutes, though. It's time to question number three.
Cool. In your business, in the programs, what's one lesson you feel like you've learned in a big way in the last year? Of course, we're always learning lessons. What's one that really stands out in your mind, a lesson that you've learned that can really help the listeners?
Sure. I would say I really think of Alex Ramosi, an entrepreneur that I know that, you know, we all greatly respect, and his value equation and how it's specifically applied to my business.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the equation, as he describes it, goes something like the dream outcome multiplied by the likelihood of success. And that's like the top part. And then on the bottom part, we have the time, both large scale macro and smaller micro, multiplied by the effort and sacrifice that's required. And
so time to get to the result.
Yeah, the time and effort. So apparently, like, the biggest potential is to be had at the bottom side of the equation, where we make things take as little time as possible and be the least effort possible. And as consumers, we intuitively understand this. I mean, we basically just want that dream outcome instantaneously with no effort. Like, so, and I feel like I understood this to some extent because as you guys know in my studio, the typical result is people achieve in 6 to 12 months what would have taken 3 to 5 years. So that's, of course, a compelling premise for most people. I'd say where I learn a lot is in terms of the effort and sacrifice. Let's just say that a 5-minute tooth extraction is worth a lot more than a 1-hour tooth extraction. Right. And so there are some cases where if I can say something or describe something in 2 sentences and it gets the same result as writing a very long essay, that's more valuable to the person. Within Gannis Collective, my mastermind, we have both live and we have asynchronous. And I mean, sometimes an hour long conversation or a long essay that might genuinely be more valuable in that moment. Other times it could be just as valuable for me to share like a screenshot with all the fingering written out for a given piece. It's just instantaneously
right
in their hands. Or it may be that it's like they hate posting things or they hate writing things.
Ooh.
And then I'm like, how about I make it so that you don't have to do that? Why don't you tell me what's easiest for you? And then we'll gravitate towards that. So is it easiest for you to just iMessage me rather than post anything?
Yeah.
Go ahead and do that. Is it easier for you to just show up on the call and do that? Then we'll just gravitate toward like, how can I make life as easy as possible?
So it's so interesting, David, because if I understand your model correctly, you're saying serious adults, they always show up. They're willing to consistently put in the time. They're willing to navigate the busy life, right? You were describing that beautifully. And yet here you are saying, also, by the way, I'm going to make it as easy as possible for you. And what's fascinating about that to me is that these people are all probably hyper successful in other facets of their life, right?
Sure.
I'm assuming.
Yep.
And they know that there's like a level of consistency and effort that goes into achieving anything, you know? And so there always seems to be sort of like a rub in that.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, I know at the gym that if I want to achieve this certain like average watt in my spin class, that I have to be showing up like for years actually to get there.
Right.
So how do you reconcile those two pieces? Because you know the effort and time it takes to complete that piano performance or that piece.
Yeah, there's still a range of different types of clients that we serve. And not everybody is like the top doctor or top software engineer, whatever, in their field. There are also more regular-ish people that are just very invested in themselves, that want to be the best them that they can be. I would say on one end of the spectrum, we do have a small number of students that they are practicing like 2 or 3 hours a day, and they're doing the most they possibly could. So they're like the most serious of the serious.
Yeah.
But serious also means, let's say somebody who, I had a student who was an attorney for Meta, and I often tell this story. When I was teaching in person by strategic teams last year, she never even purchased an instrument. She only showed up and just spent that time with me, 90 minutes each week, and she learned River Flows in You in a little over 4 months.
And she had never taken lessons before.
She was a beginner. She had played a little bit. So I can't say she was a total beginner, but it was still, that's not a result that everybody can achieve. So, but she was serious in that she showed up each week and she didn't just randomly cancel
to
flake out all the time. And so that's a big part of getting rid of some of that time, that effort and sacrifice they have to make, but they're at least committed to continue showing up, I would say.
Yeah.
Just super briefly, like I'm working still with a very small number of private clients. And there was one that was like worried, guilty feeling about like, oh, I didn't get to practice the last 2 weeks. And I can confidently say, if you do not practice and you just show up and spend this hour a week with me, you will make more progress than if you practice 2 or 3 hours a day in pretty much any other program.
Yeah. But don't show up for the lesson. Yeah. Like what you're saying. Yeah. I love that. I actually have a text from one of my few privates that I still see outside of BMW.
Sure.
Very similar to that. Like, who wasn't able, I can't make the sesh. I can't make the lesson. I'm like, that's the thing. Okay, that's 5 minutes. It actually went off a minute ago, so we got to keep moving. The fourth question, I love this question. I'm pretty sure it's a Daniel question. He came up with this, which is just, what's, based on your wisdom, David, what's one action that you can give our listeners that they can apply, like, this week in their company or this month in their company that you believe will make a difference?
Sure. And this might seem like it comes out of left field, but I really think about this a lot. I honestly think everybody should practice more. Mm-hmm. And everybody should just invest in their own playing more. So I think what people are missing a lot in our industry a lot of the time is truly being strong at piano, teaching, and business. Almost everybody is missing at least one of these things. So I think this is one of the biggest competitive advantages that I have, or that we have at this point. Because I had the piano and teaching parts, and basically when I encountered Daniel, I didn't know I was missing the business part. So it was just like a chemical reaction that was waiting to happen. And then all these possibilities just open up, because I was deep in the serious classical world. And there are some, not everybody's good at piano, not everybody's good at teaching, but there are some that are artist teachers that are really strong in both. They don't know anything about business.
Right.
They don't know anything about that. And then on the other end of the spectrum, there are some people that maybe they really do know a lot about sales, they know a lot about marketing. They're willing to invest in wonderful programs like the ones that you have made, the ones that you have, Daniel. But I don't, and maybe they're even interested in going to conferences and learning about teaching and so on. But what about practicing the piano itself? That's the thing that we're actually literally teaching. And so, for instance, there are business to business, like there are people that are teaching business. They're doing business all day long. Daniel, for instance, if he's teaching marketing, he's doing marketing like all day long.
Yeah.
Well, we're teaching piano, but is it piano we're doing all day long? Not necessarily. So I did one time.
Yeah.
And right. I'm trying my best to just continue practicing as much as I can now to be an example to my students. So I think people should practice, invest in lessons too. Take a lesson from it. If you don't feel like you're at the tippy top of your game, then you should continue your studies as well too. That'll allow you to charge much higher prices too. There's no substitute,
right?
I think, for that.
That's a bit of a humbling piece of advice for our listeners.
It's a doozy of an answer.
Yeah, because it's hard enough to be really good in one of them.
Right.
Yeah. Know, like,
I'm not saying that, you know, the ironic thing is now the business is doing well, and so that I have to be really careful that I still make time to practice. It's a temptation to just focus on the business.
But I do think this is, and I'm just going to say it, and, you know, I don't apologize for saying this, but you are running an unusual studio. You're running a studio that is 1 in 10,000, 1 in 100,000. You're charging rates that are jaw-dropping. It doesn't surprise me that you hold yourself to such a high standard in all three of those areas. And, you know, I know I'm kind of putting you on the spot with that, but I don't apologize for saying it. You don't have to necessarily respond to it, but there is a reason why your studio is so successful. But at the same time, I still think that's fantastic advice. Should we jump to question 5?
We're on to 5.
Cool.
5.
All right.
We're doing it right on time.
Yeah. What's one thing you've done for yourself personally in the past year that has brought you more joy as an owner?
I'm going to cheat a little bit here because it might be an umbrella that contains different shares.
Sure.
But I just think about if I finally achieve the success that I'm looking for, like I'm a level 2-3 levels beyond this, what would I actually literally be doing? Like all day long, what would I be doing? And I just think, why don't I just do that right now? Because I feel like, what is it I'm waiting for? Is it like a certain revenue goal? Is it a certain number of students? Like when is the, and so, you know, a lot of the time I think like, well, if I were more successful, I'd probably be, you know, reading all the times. I love reading. I'd be practicing even more. I would always be like bettering myself and learning things. I'd be going out and with my wife every day and just exploring different parts of the city. I'd be traveling and all that. So that's what I do. I just think like, why not just start doing this now? And then I schedule my schedule, and I've also constructed these programs, honestly, so that I'm able to do this already.
Yeah.
And it creates a positive loop, because typically if we're at the next level of success, then we feel more confident. We feel like, hey, I'm successful. And then that comes across even subconsciously to our potential clients. And then you have more people sign on, and then you become more successful, and you can just kind of artificially insert yourself into that loop now. Get yourself in the mindset of where you would be if you were at that next level of success already. And I think it's appropriate to say that even being in this building, which was a little bit of a stretch for us, I'm not suggesting that people should do something that is irresponsible.
Right.
I felt that if I lived in a more inspiring space that had really nice amenities and so on, that that could really impact my mindset to work in inspiring spaces. And that has turned, that's already paid itself back many times over.
Phew.
Yeah, you know what's cool, David, about this answer and the previous one is that you're, it seems to me like when you were talking about you need to improve in teaching, you need to improve in the practice of business, your craft, and as well as your playing, you're saying, hey, these three areas I'm going to model for my customers. I'm going to model what it is to actually do it. And then now you're saying in this, where do you find joy? You're finding joy in, honestly, in saying, hey, I'm going to leapfrog a couple of levels and say, I'm just going to block up my week to include what I imagine to be the life that I want to have. So you're actually living it. And I feel like you're literally modeling for your customers. And they, like you said, they just totally respond to that.
I'm trying to, because people really don't like being told what to do. I mean, yeah, they don't like it.
No,
most don't like it. And so I don't think I'm the perfect example, but I'm trying, you know, it's like you're the teacher, you want the busy adult to, you know, continue doing their job well and still practice the piano and somehow manage everything. Well, then you do it.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Show me.
You could, yeah, show them that it can be done. And I wish I could sit here and say that I have perfectly solved my life. I have not yet.
No.
But I think it's going in the right direction.
Yeah.
So that I tell my clients also and my students, like I'm right there with you. Like I am the busy adult in this problem I'm trying to solve. And yeah. I'm still trying to practice.
Who's mm-hmm.
trying to be happy and all that.
Well, you know, David, too, is I am the busy adult whose problem, you know, I'm trying to help solve. It's very different to say it versus believe it and be it. You know,
sure.
Like I feel like you're authentically saying, no, that's, I'm right there with you. And everybody can tell, right? When it's authentic, like when there's real mindful effort being put in. So yeah, amen to that. You're inspired me. I need to get back in the shed.
There's no
Raxi.
You guys inspire me, so.